This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour two rolling along. Good Friday to you. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. Continuing to look at the news and notes of the NFL. Josh Alper will join us in hour number three from ProFootballTalk.com. Are you a mock draft guy, Ron? Do you get, as we get closer and closer to the end of April, are you a mock draft person?
No,
me either. I will look at occasionally, but mock drafts are interesting because it's an industry where if you're a draft guru, what do you do? Right? Like, what do you do? You just make predictions on where you think teams are going to take players, and if they come true or not, it doesn't really matter. Right? Because you can't read their minds. Now, that's different if you're a draft guru than in like an actual reporter that's saying, oh, you know what? I've been hearing that the Indianapolis Colts like this team, or so-and-so likes this team, or what, you know, this player, or whatever. Mock draft guys look at a team and they go, here are the needs. Here are the best players on the board. And there's that old adage with, you know, do you draft best player on the board in the first round, or do you draft need? You should always draft best player on the board. That's my thought. But that doesn't always happen. Sometimes the best player on the board is a quarterback, and you don't need a quarterback because you have Joe Burrow, right? So mock drafts to me are interesting, fun, but I don't think they're a huge tool. But what they do, and I can't deny this, what they do is they generate controversy. Because you have people that will say, everyone thinks A, B, and C are the best players. Oh, no. Player W? Yeah, he's the number one pick in the draft. Now, in a world where, again, everybody's a draft guy, you need to stand out. I remember one time I was interviewing for a producer position. I was doing the interview. I was getting in candidates for a job that we had, and one of the candidates was trying to sell me his, you know, qualifications by handing me, I kid you not, a 7-round mock draft. While I was impressed with the enthusiasm for the NFL draft, it was seriously shooting a mosquito with a BB, with a, you know, bazooka. I was like, you went 7 rounds with this? I was like, wow, good for you. And at one point did I go, did you just start throwing names on this piece of paper without really, like, what the heck? I'm Joe Smith, South Dakota State. He's going to the Ravens in the 6th round. I don't care. But that's, people really like it. The people are getting really enthusiastic for it, and they, you know, people like it. Anthony Richardson is a quarterback for the Florida Gators, and he's got tremendous size and an amazing arm. But yeah, he's not the most decisive guy on the football field, and he doesn't really have good vision. He makes some bad decisions. That's why the Florida Gators weren't spectacular when he was behind, you know, under center. There was that opening game of the season against Utah where everybody was buzzing about Anthony Richardson for Heisman because he had like 3 rushing touchdowns and whatnot. He can run. He can throw on the run. Like I said, he's got a quick release and a really, really strong arm. These are things you want in a candidate. There, when you are evaluating, especially at a quarterback position, when you are evaluating a player, if he's got size and athleticism and has show like quickness or whatever it is that you're looking for, if he's got those tools already in the package but needs to develop as a player in terms of what's between the ears, right, like getting smarter at the position or, you know, doing certain things more correctly, those are things you feel like you can coach. And that's why Anthony Richardson has been moving up in people's eyes in the draft. But Chris Trapasso, I think we've had him on before.
Yeah, in the past.
He has Anthony Richards going number 1 overall in the draft, ahead of C.J. Stroud, ahead of Bryce Young, number 1 in the draft. He's the only person who's decided that, why not, I'm going to take the plunge and do this. Now, on the one hand, again, in a world of similar voices, you need your voice to stand out. So that's why I always caution people when it comes to this. We live in a hot take world. Right. And everybody's got to have a hot take. And if you want to keep a job, let's say as an NFL, how many NFL analysts does ESPN have? 50? I mean, how many former players do they have on staff to give their hot take on Lamar Jackson? You want one of those gigs? You got to move the needle. I mean, if you're an NFL analyst, if you're a former linebacker for the Seattle Seahawks and they're throwing a camera on you and they're asking you what should Lamar Jackson ask for, your best answer isn't, well, I like what Teddy Bruschi and Robert Griffin III just said. Like, that's not going to keep you employed. What you're best off doing is shaking your head, going, no, they're crazy. No, no, no. Like, you're best, you find your lane. You find the thing that you're willing to say, the craziness of what you're willing to say, right? And that's what the draft does sometimes. I've done draft shows for years with fans who call in and who do you think your team would pick? And inevitably, I always get a guy that calls up and says, no, 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 the number one draft pick should be a running back from South Dakota State. No one's ever heard of him, but he's amazing. And he should be the number one overall pick. And then I'm like, yeah, let's return from La La Land for a minute where that's not going to happen. Who is going to be the number one pick? Like, don't tell me the diamond in the rough that you know because your brother's cousin went there. You know, your cousin went there or something. I want to know in real world analysis who the number one pick is. Now, Anthony Richardson is not a stretch. He's not the linebacker from Harvard that you've never heard of, right? He's not that. He's an SEC quarterback. But the knock on Anthony Richardson is that he has things he has to learn about playing the quarterback position. And that is absolute red meat for some coaches. They love that. If you can get a guy with size, athleticism, good, strong arm, all the tools that would make a quarterback hard to take down, but he can flick it 80 yards with his finger. Like, if you can get that guy and all you have to do is teach him how to be a better quarterback, like, hey, when you're looking downfield, go here, 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 or when you're evaluating a defense, go here, here, here. If there's things that are teachable, they'll grab that. They'll grab somebody raw in that capacity, right? That was the thing of Tebow, right? So when Tebow got drafted, go back in the Wayback Machine to 2010, when Tebow was drafted in the first round, I remember being one guy that kept saying, Tebow's going in round one. And everybody thought, no, you're crazy because he doesn't have this and this and this, and he did this badly. And I said, hold on, they're teachable. You can find a coach that would want to teach him. And Tebow is a project that if you can make successful, you are cementing yourself. You're taking one of the most important athletes in college football history. Forget best. He's on the list of best, but he was significantly important. And if you can turn him into an NFL star, which nobody could do, but in the end, if you could, that's a big deal. And there's going to be one team that's going to try it. Somebody's going to do it. And somebody did. And that team was the Denver Broncos and Josh McDaniels. But in Anthony Richardson's case, this is not Tebow. This is not a guy that you go, whoa, whoa, hold on here. He was projected to be a first-round pick. He's projected to be a real – teams really looking at him. But be the number one overall pick? It says two things. One, outside of maybe, just maybe, this is one of those hot take things. Nobody's saying it, so I'll say it. But two, it will really go to what he does at the combine. Like, when we get to Indianapolis for the NFL Combine, if Anthony Richardson has one of those performances where he's the buzz, look out. This might actually come to fruition. Now, in the end, I'd be really skeptical here. I think C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young have got so much momentum going into this draft as the quarterbacks your teams are going to want if you're picking up in the top five. I honestly think that Anthony Richardson needs to have one of those combine performances that you are watching it on YouTube, like you're like Googling it to find out what exactly he did, like knocking over cones. I don't know, like whatever it is that you would do to wow teams. That's what I think has to happen. And I don't know if it will. I don't know if it will, but I'm kind of curious with this. I didn't think Anthony Richardson was a top 15 pick. Like, when I saw him at Florida, I saw a quarterback with some real downfield problems. Arm strength, great. Size, athleticism, all that checked the box. All that was good. I knew that, again, he would go in the first round, but I just didn't think it would be that high. People got him in the top 10, and now you've got a guy willing to say, no, 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 no. I think somebody is going to move up to get him. By the way, in Chris Trapasso's draft, he has the Indianapolis Colts moving up in the draft, making a deal to get the number one pick and getting it with Anthony Richardson, which is not that far-fetched. That makes sense. Yeah. The Bears don't need a quarterback. and they will be listening to everybody that does. So that's kind of where I'm going in late April. I think if you're the Bears, you find out who you want, and then you figure out where you realistically could get him, and then you let the phone ring, and you pick it up, and you find out what people want for that top pick. But I've seen teams take the number one pick anyway, right? They go, what the heck, we might as well pick, because we don't get this very often, so we might as well utilize it. But we'll see. But I just thought it was interesting. We're getting to that time of year again. When is the combine? Isn't the combine quick? Isn't it soon?
Yeah, it's coming up soon.
I was going to say, isn't it soon?
Sometime in March, right?
Yeah, I was going to say it's
when it tries to steal a little bit of thunder from March
Madness. I've never been to that.
Neither have I.
I've never been to that. Now, I've had some friends that have gone, and they say it's not as fun as you think it is. It's really kind of boring. I thought it was exciting.
I agree that with the friends.
Yeah, I was like, I didn't think it was an exciting thing to attend. Like, you're watching 40-yard dashes and jump drills and, you know, guys throwing to targets. Like, I didn't think it was going to be fun-filled, exciting. It's, you're not going to a game. You're going to workouts. Like, how fun is that? But, man, NFL Network went, you know what, slap this bad boy on TV. And everybody went, okay, all right, I like this. The NFL is great. They know who they are, and they know people gobble it up. Want to see guys in underwear running around Lucas Oil Stadium? We got you covered right here. Good stuff. Good, the bad, the dumb is coming up next. Again, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Roll along on your Friday on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb here on your Friday as we get you into that weekend with good, with bad, with dumb. Let's get the good of the day.
Good of the day is a name we probably need to start learning.
Yes.
You ready for it?
Yes.
Gerangelo... Cinche?
See, we need to learn it, but we don't even know how to pronounce it.
I don't know how to pronounce it. Gerangelo, I'm pretty, or maybe it's Urangelo, I don't know. Cinche, it's Cintje, so I'm just throwing stuff. I mean, it's probably like, you know,
Cinche. Is he YouTubeable?
Probably.
Right.
Maybe we need to do that, but I'm saying.
I get good pronunciations from YouTube. I usually put them in, boom, there it is.
But we need to learn his name because he made his first career start for Mississippi State as a pitcher.
Right.
Where he threw, he's a true freshman, lasted four innings with seven strikeouts, four scoreless innings.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Throwing 90 with both hands.
Oh, so he's ambidextrous?
He's ambidextrous. And now
who said it was, one person said he was an amphibian. There was a report.
Yeah.
It was like a TV, it was a famous, like,
that was
newspaper.
About another guy.
There was another guy who was an amphibian. I'm like, no, wrong word. But that's okay. At least you tried. At least you tried newspaper
people.
Yeah,
there was the other. I can't remember his name. He lasted for a while. He's ambidextrous, but he has more electric stuff. He's actually throwing 90s.
Can you, as an ambidextrous player, can you make a glove that fit, like, you, that you can swap? Can you be a right-handed pitcher and a left-handed pitcher?
Yeah, I think they have. I just, you know, I think I think there is a glove that he has that he can go back and forth depending on the batter.
So there's no rule that says, like, you can throw a left-handed one pitch, right-handed the other pitch.
I think he has to. One pitch. I think what it is, I think he has to start. If he starts off as a left-hander, he has to finish that as a left-hander.
Okay.
But I mean, it's helpful on the mound when you have, like, a righty coming up, you're a lefty. And then,
so he can switch between batters. He can't switch in batter.
In bat, yeah.
But he can like, the next batter, he can switch, but he can't switch it within the series, like, within the count.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. That's great. And he throws 90 both arms?
Yeah. It's like Wednesday night, he struck out one batter with a 96-mile-per-hour fastball, righty, and then in the same inning flipped it around and struck out another batter with a 92-mile-per-hour from the left.
That's incredible because I'm right-handed. My left arm is worthless.
Dead.
I don't do anything good with that.
I can't.
God. I barely pick up a pencil with it. Like, I can't even – like, I never use it. The idea that I could – throw a fast, like, I can't even throw with my left hand.
No, it looks so awkward, doesn't
it? It looks weird. It's like they told me the story of Phil Mickelson. Phil Mickelson is not ambidextrous. He's like, I'm not. I just learned to play golf left-handed. Like, I mirrored my dad when I was a kid.
Yeah.
He goes, I can't write left-handed. I can't do anything left-handed. I just learned to play golf this way early, and my muscle memory allows me to play left-handed.
My stepfather's the opposite. My stepfather is left-handed.
Right.
But he plays golf right.
Same reason?
Because those are the only clubs that were available when he started playing the game.
That's how a lot of left-handers are. A lot of left-handed golfers were like, well, there's no left-handed clubs when I was a kid.
Yeah, and he was a good golfer.
I just learned how to play right-handed.
He golfed collegiately. You had a full ride scholarship for golf.
Once you get the muscle memory, you can do it. It's getting like it's too late for me.
That's the thing that blows my mind is because you normally, like a normal pitcher, will just work his right arm or left arm, whatever his dominant hand is, until you master it.
Right.
And then once you think you master it, you keep working on it more to become a better master. You know, think of like a Justin Verlander or you know, guys of those ilk. And they're just, you know, they're constantly just throwing, just trying to get everything. And this kid's doing it on both sides of the plate.
Nice.
So, yeah, I think we better start learning his name because, 96 with his right hand, 92 with his left, he's going to get signed somewhere.
Yeah, no doubt. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. All right, what's the bad of the day?
Yeah, the bad of the day is Pac-12. Yeah, they're trying really hard to stay alive. So they're looking for a new TV deal for the Pac-12 network. I don't think they're going to get a TV deal. They're probably going to get a streaming service. And everything, you know, they're spinning it positively. Like, hey, you know what? This is great. We're going to have a streaming service. It's going to be fantastic, blah, blah, blah. But then Dennis Dodd came out with a report that basically spelled it out that it'll be just enough for them to stay together as a conference financially.
Oh, no. That's too bad. No wonder USC and UCLA leaving.
Yeah. I mean, they leave next year.
Yeah.
And then there's always the rumors that, you know, they're taking Washington with them or Oregon with them or something like that.
They need to find a way to figure out how the Big 12 survived all this. Like the Big 12 is bringing in three teams next year. I know they lose Texas and Oklahoma. And those are very, very big, but we're not talking about them, you know, digging the grave like we are the Pac-12. Somehow they just won't be able to. And you know what? The thing is that you could bring in San Diego State. If you want, right? But it's not going to be losing two teams in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I think that's the problem is that you can bring in new teams, but, you know, I mean, you and I talk about it ad nauseum. We love Pac-12 After Dark.
Yep.
I mean, it's fantastic, but honestly, how many people are actually watching it?
Yeah. I just throw it on for football. I'm not even interested in the football.
No, you're not interested in the team or anything like that.
I'm just watching it, doing something else.
But you will stop what you're doing if Alabama's playing against Georgia or, you know, Georgia, Florida or, you know, Vanderbilt, South Carolina. You'll stop at those and be like, hey, I need to watch this game.
Yep.
And I don't think the Pac-12 has it.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
You know, I grew up in the Pac-12, so, I mean, I'm very familiar with the teams, but we only get excited when Oregon is relevant. You know, it's like, you know, we'll watch Oregon games, but we don't really care who they're playing. And you know, so at that point, we don't even care about Oregon playing.
Football is, you know, obviously king, but it also losing UCLA is a basketball power.
Yeah.
Like, that's terrible, too. Like, that's, you know, it's you're right. It's a mess. And they're just, it's not something that you feel like you're getting excited about. You know what I mean? It's you can add a team here and there, but unless it's got a major push. And remember, they added Utah and Colorado about a decade ago, and they thought that they were really popping as a conference. They went from they added these two teams, the Denver market, the Salt Lake City market. It was a big deal, Pac-10 to Pac-12. Now it's meh, meh, meh. So, yeah, it's kind of too bad. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is kind of like an extension of the bad. It's just, you know, it's hard to fathom. You and I have talked about this before, that the running back position really is dead.
It really is.
According to reports, Ezekiel Elliott, remember back in 2019 when he held out and got that 6-year, $90 million deal?
Yep.
Well, he knows that his future with Dallas is murky, so he is agreeing. He is willing to restructure his contract. So that way they can stay under the cap space.
Wow. Yep, that's what inevitably happens, right?
Yeah, instead of, because if they can't, they're just going to outright release them.
Yeah.
Sorry, we just can't afford you. You're gone. You're cut.
This league is amazing. It's the power it has in its contracts is crazy.
It's sickening.
It really is. I mean, other athletes get who in the NBA, it's like, yep, I can just bounce around. It doesn't matter. Somebody signed my paperwork to give me $62 million and right. I'm getting the $62 million from somewhere.
Guys who aren't even that, somehow. You know, just role players really on their team are getting these huge deals.
And NFL players are told you have to take pay cuts or you don't have a job or, you know, like we're releasing you. Like, and I always warn fans about this all the time, especially young people. I had to tell this to my son once. Do not look at the number of the contract. Look at the money guaranteed. That's what he's getting. That's really what he's getting. You can dump one of these contracts at any moment. So if you see a player sign a 5-year, $50 million deal like Bobby Wagner did, find out what the guarantee is. That's the money he's looking at, because just like what we just saw yesterday, the Rams just went, bye, clip. Yep. That's it, bye. Taylor Lewan got a huge deal a couple years ago. Wednesday, clip, thanks. See ya, bye. Robert Woods, bye.
We talk about it all the time. It is just amazing how fast they just go, no, we don't need you.
Can you imagine?
We don't need you.
Can you imagine, again, if you don't manage your money correctly, as a mid-level player, I'm not talking star where you're getting like nine figures. I'm talking like a 3-4 year defensive end, average player, but good enough to be an NFL player. If you don't manage your money and you're out of the league,
maybe flirted with a Pro Bowl, right?
Yeah, maybe flirted with a Pro Bowl. Maybe got a million or two, whatever. And you leave the league and you see the opportunity. Like, I didn't even make enough money to last my lifetime.
Yeah.
Like I was a professional athlete in the United States of America, and I gotta become a real estate agent, or I gotta get into banking, or I gotta have a radio show, or I gotta do something else, because after paying everybody that I hired when I was a player, I was left with only this.
I mean, that was a friend of ours, a former producer here. I mean, that's what he did. I mean, he bounced around from team to team. He was mainly a practice squad, but he made it to the big show every once in a while. Enough to get medical coverage by the NFL.
Yep.
But he's a real estate agent now.
Yeah. Some of these guys do it. I used to see it in Denver. I'd go like, oh, didn't he used to play? Yeah. Playing the Broncos, stayed in town, got his this or that. He was one guy was an investment banker, got into investment banking. I was like, all right. But a lot of it was out of necessity. Because again, and as an adult, I would look back, but if I was 21 years old with money, it would probably be gone too.
Oh, like, yeah. You know what I mean? You got to live that NFL lifestyle.
You got to live that.
Everyone NFL expects NFL you to.
All right. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb. It's a Friday as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Glad you could be with us.
To Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Ron and I were just talking off the break about running backs, you know, because we were talking about, we did that with the good, the bad, and the dumb, and Ezekiel Elliott and whatnot. And if you're a running back in the NFL, so hard to get that real, real good money. And a lot of it is just simply production-based. It's really like, when it's kind of like in the analytics, right? It's like, okay, if you rush for 1,500 yards, do I have to pay you $10 million a year to do that? Or can I pay two guys to get me 1,500 yards from the backfield? Like, can I, it's just strictly a numbers thing. Like, can I get that in my offense cheaper? You may be a powerful back. You may be able to break tackles. You may be able to bust a play like a Derrick Henry. But also they go, well, if our offense is, how much of our offense is around the running game? And can I get that same production cheaper? And that's how it works. Whereas like quarterbacks, there's like an intangible level, right? Like, yeah, you may lose games early with Joe Burrow in his rookie year, but you know, deep down when he gets better and better, you're going to be an unstoppable offense, that kind of thing. But we were saying that, you know, you're never going to see a running back drafted number one overall. You don't even see running backs go in the first round that often. Like every now and then they do, but it's one of those positions where you go, all right, maybe with the 23rd pick. And so we ended up looking it up, and the last running back to be selected number one overall was 1995. Kajana Carter out of Penn State, that to the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
The number one, that's close to 30 years ago. In fact, outside of Trayvon Walker, who was the defensive end out of Georgia that was number one in Jacksonville, I mean, really, it's everyone's picking quarterbacks. And that's really it. quarterbacks and defensive ends. The last non-quarterback or defensive end to be drafted in the NFL is Eric Fisher, the tackle out of Central Michigan by the Kansas City Chiefs in 2013. I mean, obviously you would expect quarterbacks. I mean, yeah, I mean, if, here's the deal. If you're picking number one, you usually don't have a good quarterback, right? Or you're in the case of the Chicago Bears or Jacksonville last year, where you have a rookie who's going to struggle, but you like him and you want to see what he can do with a couple of more years. That was the Bears. Jacksonville got the number one pick after the rookie season of Trevor Lawrence. So, or, you know, in the case of Justin Fields, he finally got to be a starter after going into his second year, and now they still sort of believe in him. But, yeah, I mean, the Bengals were looking for a QB, Arizona looking for – well, they weren't. They had Josh Rosen, and they still went with Kyler Murray. Remember that deal? Baker Mayfield. You know,
In fact, I'm looking at the have a page, a Wikipedia page that has all the number one picks.
Yeah, looking at that too. Yeah.
The last time it wasn't a tackle, defensive end, or quarterback was 96 with Keyshawn Johnson as a wide receiver.
Wide receivers.
And then, one year before that, Kajana Carter at halfback. And then it goes right back to – defensive players, quarterbacks, and tackles.
Yeah, and so that, it goes back to what I was saying at the top of the hour about Anthony Richardson, right? It's like, well, when you make a prediction on who's going to be the number one overall pick in the draft, naturally you would say who has the pick, and then you start thinking, well, how desperate would a team be to get that number one slot? And you'd say, okay, pretty desperate, because if that team is not projected to take a quarterback, you would expect that the phone would be ringing. But it's not a stretch to take the best quarterbacks out of the group and just pick one of those. It's not like Trapasso was saying. It wasn't like he was saying like a safety should be the number one overall pick. Like he wasn't going down a weird, you won't believe who I have as the number one overall pick. He wasn't doing that. Where it's unlikely that position group would be drafted number one. He just took the quarterbacks and he said, okay, there's about four of them, right? That you could say are legit first round quarterbacks. There's about four of them: C.J. Stroud, Will Levis, Bryce Young, and Anthony Richardson. And he just took one of those and said, I'm going to go this way with it. But the process of drafting a quarterback number one, well, that's a no brainer, right? Like that's easy. You've already narrowed down who the number one overall pick is going to be based on just picking the right position and the right position at quarterback. Now, if you were to say to somebody, okay, I guarantee the Bears are going to pick number one. I guarantee it. They're not trading the pick. I'm guaranteeing it they're going to make the first. Then you have a legitimate, well, where do they go? Are they enamored with a quarterback over Justin Fields? That's kind of the argument now, where people are kind of debating, should they be all in on Justin Fields? Or any other of these young quarterbacks, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity? Because when was the last time the Bears picked number one overall? The 40s, right?
Something like that.
So you never see this as a fan where your team, if you're a Chicago Bears fan, picking number one overall. So there's your opportunity to get a franchise quarterback. Not trying to figure out if the one you have is ever going to be that way. But now you sort of open it up a little bit. But even then, you're only going to open it up to, if I said that to somebody, a draft guru, and I said, all right, give me your top pick if the Bears make it, he's only going to stay within a short limit of the position as well. Well, he would say, well, if the Bears are going to pick, then he's going to look at defensive ends, or he's going to look at, he's going to look at, well, what else? What else? Defensive end or quarterback has been the trend in the last 10 years, 15 years.
I'm looking at it now. The Bears, they've had two number one picks overall ever. 41 and 47.
Yeah, wow.
Both spent on halfbacks, by the way.
Wow. Imagine you could live a long life, 75, 73 years old, and never see the Bears pick number one.
I mean, how many people alive right now?
Yeah.
Born
who,
like
who 40, remember the 40, Bears picking number one?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a smaller number.
Right, yeah, exactly.
A real small number.
I'm now looking to see that the Bears took Bob Fenimore, a running back out of Oklahoma A&M.
Is that even a school?
Is that Oklahoma
State?
Oh,
now? That's Oklahoma State, yeah.
I was gonna say, is that Oklahoma State now? So there you go.
That's how far back it goes.
Yeah. So that it's It's a wild study. I've never gone into being a mock draft guy because it's so much speculation. It's almost not worth it. But it's not that difficult to sort of see where the trends are and where it's going and go, all right. But if you were a betting guy, would you put money on the Bears making that pick or the Bears trading that pick?
I think the Bears trade that pick.
I do too.
I think they roll with Justin Fields. I mean, I know that, you know, there's a decent amount of quarterbacks coming out this year. I don't know if it's an exciting class as if we had like in the past. You know, it's a good year for quarterbacks as opposed to last year. I think they were still roll the dice with Justin Fields, so I don't see why they wouldn't. He didn't play terrible. He just had a terrible team around him. He had a shoulder injury
for a good portion of the season.
Right.
At least the latter part of the season. Not a good portion of the season, but the latter part of the season that derailed him a bit.
But it was a terrible team around him.
It was a terrible team. Build the team around him.
But again, I mean, you know, do the Bears – I mean, if I'm the Bears, I kind of evaluate the whole situation. Maybe it is making a deal with the Colts and saying, you guys really need a quarterback. Or calling, you know, someone like that. Falcons, Saints, you know, what are some of the other teams that really need a quarterback?
I can't imagine.
Packers.
If you're the Bears, I can't imagine that you couldn't figure out the plan to get who you really want and, by taking him number one. There are so many teams desperate to get that one pick for the quarterback, and you know Houston is going to go quarterback.
Yeah, just call the Texans, so man. They always do it.
Yeah, you just need to be in a position to fight off anybody else in the draft, in the top five, that's not going after a quarterback. You need to be above them if there is somebody on the board you really want that doesn't play that position, right? That's the thing. So I'm really... But you know what? Part of me, if Justin Fields was going out of his rookie contract and he had a number of years of – remember, he was a rookie, didn't play much, and then he finally got the job, right? Like he finally got the job this year. So you're not getting a proper evaluation. Back when I told you about when here in Nashville when Tennessee had the number two pick and everybody knew that it was going to be – Marcus Mariota or Jameis Winston, and the Titans could get the one that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers didn't want, right? And it ended up feeling like it was a Jameis Winston thing. So what we in Nashville were buzzing about was Marcus Mariota. Would they take Marcus Mariota, or would they trade it for a package of picks or something that could help them fill in other spots? Because kind of like they had Zach Mettenberger, which seemed pretty good. He seemed all right. But in the end, they went, no. Because what we don't see in Zach Mettenberger is this star power that we can put on pamphlets and billboards and season tickets and like everything that you use a franchise quarterback for, we can't generate the buzz with him. And you know what? We're not even sure he's that good. And sure enough, Zach Mettenberger disappeared from the league. Marcus Mariota was picked because sometimes you end up going, you know what? I know I got holes. I know I got problems. But you know what? Franchise quarterbacks, exciting quarterbacks sell. But the Bears aren't in a position like that. The Bears are still selling Justin Fields. They're still promising that there is a bright future for Justin Fields. So it's not like trying to sell a quarterback that showed some good things, but yeah, I don't know. They believe he's the guy. And so if you go with Bryce Young with the number one pick or CJ Stroud or whoever, you're basically cutting that off. You're saying that's done. After one full season where he suffered an injury and having a bad team, we went, nope. Running us in a good Friday to you as we continue. Josh Alper is going to join us in hour three as we continue along this morning. We'll talk some NFL football with him. Speaking of the NFL, here's another story that's popping up. Look, it's the business side of football, but because it involves a team that's so dysfunctional, it's worth noting. And involves one of the most powerful individuals on the planet. Jeff Bezos is interested in becoming the new owner of the Washington Commanders. No doubt, when you're worth $120 billion and you can't, and it's a country club, if you will, that you can't get into unless you get in. You know, you can buy a team. It's natural that these guys would want to be interested in that kind of club.
Well, I know. So we're talking about like what the Commanders are about $5 billion to buy.
He wants Daniel Snyder wants $7 billion. People have said he might get like six,
okay.
six three.
I'm just curious because, you know, if the owners, you know, because it always goes to the vote for the to the owners.
Right.
If the owners sit around, it's like, yeah, okay, Bezos, I know you want, you're spending $6 billion on this. A couple of us also want a free ride. We want to go to outer space.
Yeah, right. We want, yeah, we'll vote on this if you can send us to space.
There's going to be a couple stipulations in there that, you know, it reminds me of that scene in Armageddon. You know, they're like, yeah, they don't want to pay taxes.
Right. Ever. They don't ever. Yeah, exactly. Do you think Bezos walks in and goes, Amazon Prime for everyone?
Yeah.
Free Amazon, rest of your life, people. Free Amazon Prime if you vote me in. Ooh. Now that's like $100.
That's the wife would like that.
The wife would love that. That's fantastic. Thank you, Jeff. But there's a report that Daniel Snyder doesn't want to sell to Jeff Bezos because Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post. And Snyder, because this is how he thinks, he believes that the Washington Post was ordered by Bezos to run damaging stories on Snyder to force him to sell the team to Jeff Bezos. Basically, he's accusing Bezos of using his newspaper to facilitate a sale of the team to him.
I mean, I don't see the flaws in that.
I know, right? So Snyder would probably be like, anybody but him. $7 billion. No. $8 No. $9 No. $10 Well, $10 All right. Well, let's talk. So that could happen.
But what you have to go out to his yacht in the middle of the Atlantic.
Yeah. Is that how you do it? Do you go to his Spy Who Loved Me shark pit lair? Do you go out to that one? You know, rising up from the ocean.
Comes out with the briefcase.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's like one single check in there. How about this?
Goodness. Would Jeff Bezos be a good owner, do you think? I mean, he's, you know.
You know, I don't. Okay,
he's built one of the biggest companies in the world has ever seen.
Here's the deal. Let's look at some of the more recent owners, right?
Right.
Who took over a team. The Walmart Corporation. I think it's still too early to tell. You know, but what I want to see out of an owner is, like, I like it when they're a fan.
Yeah, I do too. I like Steve Cohen's.
Loving what Steve Cohen is doing right now, even though he's about to get sued. I was going to bring up the story, but I was like, "Eh, it's kind of stupid."
Yeah, right.
getting sued by a pitcher who's like, "Oh, I was let go because of ageism," and they were like, "Yeah, you're 82."
Yeah, right. No,
sorry,
but you hit the nail on the head here. I mean, look. Do we have more billionaires than ever before? Sure, right?
Yeah.
There's a new world, and it's a new technological world. So a billionaire, like in, you know, 1980, was it just a unique individual? But now, yeah, there's a lot. There's young billionaires, right? There's 25-year-old billionaires who found the right thing, invented the right app, got their things sold. But the reality of it is that this is now, it seems like, gone is just... Gone is like, I hate to bring him up because he's the one selling the team, but gone are like the Dan Snyders of the world who, like, in the 90s built businesses and became self-made millionaires. They weren't quite the billionaire level, but the local NFL team was for sale for like $400 million and they bought it. And now it's like there's another level of owner now. Like, are we surprised that the Walmart family is in the NFL now?
No.
No, right? Not at all. Like, there's again, you could have a 22-year-old tech kid buy the Memphis Grizzlies. Like, you know, yeah, you can do that. But we're talking about only a certain amount of people can afford the liquid money that you need to buy an NFL team now. If he gets $6.5 billion for the Commanders, how many billionaires out there are that liquid?
Right.
That they can buy that team. Not very many.
And then all of a sudden you have like someone like the Cowboys refinancing.
Right.
If that's a possible.
Exactly.
Things like, oh, if these were six,
exactly.
Can you imagine what we're worth?
And that's what you have to have. You can't have $1 billion or $5 billion in credit or assets. You need liquid money. Like Mark Cuban talked about this all the time with Donald Trump when Donald Trump was trying to buy the Bills. Trump was like, I'm going to buy the Bills. And Cuban's like, no, he isn't. It's not liquid. He can't go and get at the time of that story years ago was like, I think it was $2 billion.
Yeah.
And he said, he can't get $2 billion in a briefcase. He can't do it. That's what you need to buy a professional team. You need it.
Yeah,
liquid.
It's literally like going Steve to a Ballmer, store.
Steve Ballmer was liquid. Steve Ballmer could do $2 billion for the Clippers with a check.
Yeah.
Right? That's what you need.
Who do I make it out? What was the story?
Who do I make this out to? Golly. And
get that in my couch.
And you know what's an interesting angle to this? Bezos buys this for $7 billion. I wonder 30 years from now if people are like, wow, $7 billion. That's pocket change.
Oh, definitely like, will.
He got that for $7
what
was, billion.
What did Jerry
We're doing
Jones?
It with the Cowboys. Yeah,
yeah, what did Jerry Jones? Didn't he get it for like $400 million or something like that? Or $4 million?
It might even been less than that.
Yeah, it was something ridiculous.
But at the time, you're like, whoa. Right? Because it was 89. Right? It was like in the late 80s. And just the exponential growth, it's really crazy. But again, there's a lot of economic factors that go into these things, and exclusivity is the biggest one.
All right,
right?
89. You ready for this number?
Yeah.
$150 million.
$150 million. He got the Cowboys.
Yeah. Now they're estimating. Well, let's see. I guess $8 billion is what they're estimating now.
Oh, absolutely. Can you? I don't think I'm going to, because I think the Joneses are going to keep that for generations.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I would love at one point in my career to talk about the sale of the Dallas Cowboys and what that's going. Because it's one thing when Forbes goes, it's worth this. That's fine. Things can be worth whatever you want. You got a painting, you got a Jackson Pollock on your wall for $2 million, whatever. It's when you sell it. That's when the story gets really interesting.
No, Jerry has came out and said that he thinks he can get $10 billion for it.
I think he could.
No doubt in my mind.
I think he could. If you put it on the market today, if he said, screw it, I'm out, I'm selling this thing, $10 billion, I think would be the start.
In that same breath, though, he did say, I'll never sell.
Never sell. He'll never sell. His kids will never sell. His grandkids will never sell. Now, so in our lifetime, we'll never see the Cowboys up for sale.
No, but I mean, I easily could get $10 billion. You kidding me?
For that
franchise.
Worldwide franchise? Heck yeah.
Yeah, sorry, Panthers, Jaguars, or Jaguars, seriously. Or Jaguaries.
Yeah, but if you are Shad Khan in Jacksonville, let's say, right, and you don't have the power of the Dallas Cowboys star or whatever it is, you still are selling exclusivity. You are still selling something to billionaires around the world that they cannot buy.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's also, you know, I think we might start seeing like more people like the Walmart family going, what else can we buy?
What else can we get? What can make us excited?
I have an island.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty certain the Walmart family has bought an island somewhere just because.
It's like, again, if you're Jeff Bezos and you got $120 billion, you look for things you can't buy. Like, you can't just buy. You can't just...
He already went to space. Now it kind of seems like that whole project's dead.
You can't just wake up one day, tell your assistant, find me an NFL team to buy. Like, you need a seller. You need to be approved. You need to go through the whole thing with the league to make sure you're going to be a, you know, obviously in his case, he can afford it. But a lot of cases, like, if I invented an app and I sold it for a couple of $1 billion, the NFL would look into my finances.
Yep.
Right? If I'm a nobody, they would look into my finances. They would make sure I could pay for it. They would make sure I could run it. They would and they could all say no. You could be a trillionaire. And if the other owners say no, you can't get into the club. You can't.
Yeah.
And it's not one of those things where, like in Batman, where he goes, I just bought the restaurant. Like, you hear stories about that. They're like, I didn't get approved for this country club, so I just bought the country club.
Yeah.
Like, that's not how it works.
I couldn't get a table at this restaurant, so.
I bought the restaurant.
Now I own it.
Yeah, now I own it. Right? You can't do, like, the Bruce Wayne thing.
No.
You.
They could not approve you because they don't like your shoes.
They may not like, they just may not want you in there. And it's their right to do that. So, if Snyder says, now Bezos could get another team eventually that's whatever, if they pop up. But Snyder could stand his ground and go, no, absolutely not. I'm not selling. I'll keep it before I sell it to him. And because they want him out so quickly, they'll tell him, nah, you're never going to get this one. Go get another one, but you're not getting this one.